Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
You're listening to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs show with a panel discussing the issues of the day. The date is the 23rd of May. Joining me in the studio today, Rosalind Scott-Gibb, Alf Brewer and Nathan Thomas. You want to get involved with the show? 952-784-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. News today dominated by the Manchester attacks, but we may come back to this a little bit later on if there's any more breaking news. We had an email in from Bob, who says the money is available to fund a caring society. We were talking just before the break about the dementia care cap. Theresa May apparently allegedly doing a U-turn. We'll come on to that in a minute. The money is available to fund a caring society. This government chooses to put that money into tax breaks for large businesses and the super rich set in tax havens. It seems that the Tories want the less able to cover the costs, and all funds go up the food chain to their wealthy club members. That's from Bob. It's, you know, an emotive issue. You said before the break at the start of when you were talking about this, Alf, that people are voting for personalities and not policies. Now, this set my alarm bells ringing, and we'll come on to that in a minute because we have a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning. My name's Robert.
Morning, Robert.
And I live in Meath, and I've lived here for 21 years. And of course, I can't vote. But I do. I've never voted Labour in my life. I'll be honest about that. I don't like Corbyn, but I will say this much. What they're putting forward, to me, is reasonable. To start capping and making it difficult for old people in their finishing years of life, after many of them suffered badly in England in World War II, scrimped and saved, just eat to live, frightened that a bomb wouldn't come down and kill half the family. That's that group. Now then, I feel as a nation, including me, of course I'm in that era, we are owed at least something for our patients. Not take away what we have done and tried to do as a subject during those years and in subsequent years. We've all paid our national insurance. We've all paid our taxes. Some of them haven't, but still, that's neither here nor there. But in general terms, they have. Now, for goodness sake, don't start kicking them around like a piece of wasted rubbish, which is what Theresa May's doing. And as for that interview with Theresa May last night, that was appalling. She only had one word. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It was appalling.
I saw people quoting on social media saying they wanted to vote for Andrew Neil as Prime Minister after that particular interview, Robert.
I agree with him. I agree. It was terrible. She never answered one question, and his questions weren't unreasonable. And I thought, I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed. This woman's going to be our Prime Minister. Oh, my goodness. It's ridiculous. She's not capable of pushing a dust cart.
You're right, Robert, but now you understand why I'm saying this election, for the first time in my memory since Michael Foot times, this election is more about the individual leaders than it is about the party and the party politics. Because, yeah, we can all say what we say. I've read the Labour Party manifesto. I've been a party member for too many years to remember. I was an activist. I worked for the party. Yeah, I know all these, but what you don't ever get from any of it is, you know, this is what we're going to do. So it's fine. What you got from the media, from the Labour Party manifesto, is that they're just going to renationalise everything. That was the media line on the Labour Party manifesto. Which is absolute arrant nonsense. Seriously, reading party manifestos is difficult at the best of times, but if people get the chance, just have a look, and then have a look at the Lib Dems. The Lib Dems say quite specifically, we're not going for the victory. We just want to be good opposition because Labour doesn't offer good opposition. Yeah, that's not a way to run an election campaign. That's about him as an individual leader saying, well, we know we can't get power, but I would like to have a bigger voice in Parliament. You know, for the SNP, what has she got? Nothing. She's got nothing other than second referendum. That's all she's got. And so this is why it's become an issue for the four parties, but 20 party leaders, but the four basic parties for their leadership thing. The same with what Bob said about the money, without going back on it, it's quite clear. You have choices in life. Of course there's enough money to pay for all the caring for elderly people. Of course there's lots of money swishing about. What we won't have is we won't have a nuclear deterrent. We won't have decent hospitals. We won't have better education. We'll choose to spend all our money on caring for the elderly. We have choices in life and we have to make it. And you know, Bob quite rightly says, you know, money goes to all these rich people, quite rightly, but that's called a loophole, mainly on taxes. And that's where they all get away with it. It doesn't matter what law they bring in about taxes, the rich will always find a way to avoid them.
Talking about, going on about personalities rather than issues itself, though, I was quite, and I just, obviously, I'm an accredited journalist and all that sort of stuff. I've been following the press for a long time with this one. I was quite stunned by the level of quite a few of the front pages running over the past couple of days about Corbyn saying that he wouldn't condone the bombings of the IRA and also the loyalists, and the way that some of the media picked up on this and saying that, you know, Corbyn was basically making him out to be an IRA operative. I thought that was quite an interesting take from several of the British media on a personal attack.
And not true. And absolutely, totally not true. Corbyn came out and said, I do not condone either what Sinn Féin or the IRA did. And he mentioned both of them.
The loyalists, whatever.
Whatever he used both of them, and he did say the IRA specifically. I don't condone what they did, blah, blah, blah. But the media, you're right, will always pick it up and say, yeah, but you did this. Because Gerry Adams has come out and said that we're supporting Corbyn because Corbyn's speaking. And you go, no, what Corbyn was saying was no different to what Blair had said, to what John Major had said. My mate, the MP who was the Minister for Northern Ireland, a guy called John Golding MP, was saying this to me in the early 70s. Ireland is about Ireland sorting its own solutions out, and that's all Corbyn said. You know, you cannot impose a solution on two warring sides without the two warring sides being involved in the solution. So you have to involve the IRA. You have to talk to the IRA. That doesn't mean Corbyn's an IRA supporter. And listen, nobody who knows me knows that I like Corbyn or support him. But I'm a Labour Party member and I support what the Labour Party do.
Nathan?
Well, I think it is more than it has been in the past, a personality thing, partially because Corbyn is such a strong personality and people either love him or hate him, and he does represent the Labour Party, except for the people who hate him in the Labour Party who say he doesn't represent them. But the most dramatic thing about this election is, to some extent, his personality. Theresa May has worked the same thing. A lot of her campaigning is about May, about what she is going to do and so on, which I'm used to in the United States because, again, there, when president and everything else, you are electing the person. Here, in the UK, you are not electing her, although that would be the outcome if you elect conservative parliamentarians throughout the country. I mean, she will end up being the prime minister, of course, but they are banking much more on her personality versus Corbyn's personality, to make their points in the election. The other thing that I think is interesting, and especially in this past week, and as we get closer to it, it seems to be coming much less about Brexit and much more about domestic and mostly financial issues.
Rosalind, your thoughts, please.
Well, I think she appears to be letting down the party, or she's doing something wrong, because she's also brought out this point about removing school lunches for children. So if you're not going to look after your children and you're not looking after the old people, that you're not going to be very popular, I would have thought. These are sort of basics in any society, and Britain should be considered a wealthy, a rich society. These are the things that should be looked after.
Do you not think it's... Sorry, Nathan.
Well, I think the one thing she's doing, because she had such a strong lead in the polls, I think she and whether it's her or whoever in the party, but, I mean, they've decided that they can be more realistic about, we don't have the money to do everything for everybody, and here's some of the things that are going to go, so we're not going to make promises that sound wonderful for everybody, and then after we get elected, because we expect to be elected, we're not going to be able to keep those promises. We're going to tell you now things are going to be tough, and maybe when we're elected, we can actually make it better than it sounds now.
But it's what Alf said, there is enough money, it's just how you choose to spend it. And the choices they're making, to me, are very unhealthy and very unpopular. Taking away school lunches.
I mean, we've seen
a lot of these children are not being, for any number of reasons, either because both parents are working and nobody is there to make a dinner, and because a couple of generations haven't learned how to cook either. So there's a lot of reasons.
But you have to understand where they're coming from.
Please don't interrupt. I didn't interrupt you. Why children are not being fed correctly. And in addition to being expecting, they should be expecting a good education and to be fed and medicine, decent medicine. Children, every child is entitled to that.
But school lunches isn't the issue. This is an academic argument. It's been going on in education in the UK for at least 10 years. It's about kids being fed properly. So instead of giving them a free school meal, this is the academic argument, instead of giving some people free school meals, you give everybody a school breakfast. Now, that's an academic argument as to whether you're feeding them properly or not feeding them properly, but there's never been free school meals for every kid that goes to school. Never, ever. Not in my whole lifetime has there ever been free school meals. Free school meals for those who can't afford. What the Tories are doing cleverly. But what the Tories are saying cleverly is, we're going to give breakfasts to every child because we don't think even the people who can afford it ever get their kids up and give them a proper breakfast before they start the school day. So you miss the first 2 hours of the school day because they're not being fed properly.
And we've got some callers on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Raymond from Mallorca.
Good morning, Raymond.
But I'll start off with a statistic, which I have every reason to believe is true. This is just a statistic that came from the United Nations within the last fortnight. And 4 million children in Britain live in poverty. So it's not always a question of having breakfast cooked or not for them. We're talking about children who possibly, without food at school, probably wouldn't eat. According to Mr. Stephen Ritson on his programme a couple of weeks ago, and I have no reason to disbelieve his figures either, 400,000 people using food banks. We've got some pretty serious issues over there. And pensioners, if I may, I was a kind of private individual activist, if you like, before I came over here 4 years ago. I was trying to do something about guaranteed pension credits and top up for pensioners. What I found out was 35,000 pensioners die every year through hypothermia. What Mrs. May intends to do is going to make the situation much worse for them, so possibly the death toll will go up. We have to understand one thing, and I'm not being nasty here, it's just the nature of the beast. The Conservative Party, since the very beginning, has always represented a certain type of person, usually privileged people, people with power. They've never really, really cared about the working class people, about the masses. The Labour Party have. They were there for that. And I must say that I'm not a Tony Blair supporter, but I do know that the 13 years under Tony Blair, quite a lot was done. He introduced the minimum wage. He did a lot. He also introduced this thing called guaranteed, which I've just mentioned, guaranteed pension credits, which is a top-up, which is not a handout. He made it law. The only thing he didn't do, bless him, he forgot to tell people about it. Only the British Legion know about this. Otherwise, you have to go up and accost people in the street and give them the free test. It's dead easy to get. It's really easy to get guaranteed pension credits. Of course, you can't expect the Conservatives to let people know about this either. We've got a problem over there in the UK. We've got a problem with poverty. Much of it is hidden. We've got a problem with a party that will more than likely, unfortunately, win the general election. That's the Conservative Party, who traditionally just see us as the mass. We're the statistics in the background. We're not in the centre stage. We're not really that important. They don't really care what they think. They don't care what we think. As long as we vote for them, that's, they'd like that. They'd like us to vote for them. But otherwise, we're not in their clubs. We never would be accepted. That's all. It's just rather frustrating. Oh yeah, just finish off. I remember about the pensions. We have the lowest state pension in Western Europe. I remember talking to my Lib Dem MP before I came over, I said 4 years ago, Mr. Adrian Sanders from Torbay. And I said to him, I went into the surgeon, I said, Mr. Sanders, we have the lowest state pensions in Western Europe. He said, now this is frightening. He said, no, we don't. Czechoslovakia does. I didn't have the heart to tell him that Czechoslovakia hadn't existed for 20 years. This is a member of parliament, for British Parliament, European Union. He didn't know that. I give up.
Raymond, thank you for your calls. We've got another caller. Oh, good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. Thank you for holding. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, morning, Sharon Alicante.
Morning, yes, Sharon.
Thank you, Ray. You said everything I was thinking. But this awful, awful, heartless government, I was hoping they'd do away with the bedroom tax, because I know I've worked with elderly and I've worked with adults with learning disabilities, and I can tell you that when you're disabled, sick or ill, you need an awful lot of space for wheelchairs, incontinence pads, various pieces of paper. You need that space, and I'm so, so sad that this awful lot haven't done away with this awful tax on the disabled and the sick. What I really wanted to say is that their ultimate goal is to leave power saying, we've paid the deficit off. And look who suffered, of course. It would be the disabled, the lower paid, and the likes of you and I. It's all about paying off the deficit, this is. It's just awful that we're the fifth richest economy in the world, and yet we're on some schools are talking about a four-day week. The health service is being privatised, which is actually costing us more. I've heard people have hip and knee replacements over there saying, it's wonderful, I went into a private hospital and had breakfast served on a tray, not realising that that is costing the NHS far more than if it was under government, full government, fully funded by the national government. The country is breaking down, and it's all about legacy. It's all about leaving power saying, we've paid off the deficit. Isn't that wonderful? Vote for us again. Thanks a lot.
Sharon, thank you for that. Nathan, come back on a point there.
Well, the one question on that is if the Conservatives are only for the minority, very rich people, why do they keep winning elections?
Because the people who are in poverty don't vote.
And okay. We have a caller on the line again. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello?
Hello, you're live on
right.
TRE.
Okay, I'm just calling from up in the village. All I wanted to say was, why don't they give them breakfast and dinner? They're young children, and they'll be hungry at midday as well. Instead of going home, they can have their lunch there as well. So why not give them both instead of changing round? That's what all I'm saying.
Thank you for your call in.
Okay.
Just to make it certain, I'm not an advocate of this. I don't agree with the policy. I happen to live in a family full of teachers, and my wife used to be a welfare assistant in a primary school in the UK, a big primary school. And she'll tell you, kids who do not get their free school lunches, and kids who don't have a proper paid school lunch, are far worse off than anybody else. What the Tories are doing now is because some academic has said you need to start the day off with a full belly. It's an academic argument. There's no reality to any of it. And they just couldn't afford to give everybody breakfast and lunch. So what they're doing is they've made a choice.
And we've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're like, Yari, what's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Kate Costa-Blanca.
Yes, Kate.
Answering Nathan's question, why do people keep voting for her since she's only operating in the interests of the very few? The propaganda campaign, I didn't think it would get much worse than what Miliband endured, but the terrible attacks on Corbyn by the right-wing press.
Mm.
as we mentioned before, with the seemingly IRA link. Rosalind, you want to come in with a point there?
Well, just that if we're going to be concerned about breakfast for children, the whole Western world is not getting any a healthy breakfast anyway. All the cereals that are sold, I just read an in-depth article about it, and there's only one cereal that gives as much as 3% of any sort of nutritional value. And in fact, most of those cereals, which people live on, are doing the body a great deal of harm. So I think we should forget about the breakfast idea and stick to school lunches for children that are not eating, that will not eat, will not have a meal.
You cannot forget about something that's in a Tory party manifesto that when they get power, which is likely, they will implement. I don't agree with their
But you
philosophy.
See, we say, which is likely, and we have been proved wrong on this show on three occasions. Brexit, yeah. We have the Trump election, and this one as well. And look at the swing that we have seen. And look at also, I just want to, we're talking about the old people, but, you know, the Labour Party and has been vociferous in wooing the youth vote. They're saying, get out there. You didn't get out there during the European referendum, and look what happened. Do you think that that's going to have any impact?
And I'll tell you something, because Nathan said, what about the people who are in poverty and blah, blah, blah. And I go, I was a Labour Party organiser for years. I was part of the Blair control. I didn't, you know, Blair wasn't my favourite, but I worked for him. And I did organising work in London. And the people who never went to vote were the poorest people who came off the councils.
Well, he was a charismatic speaker, of course.
But it doesn't matter. He can be the best speaker on the planet. If he goes into Woolwich Common... Woolwich Common Council Estate, less than 1 in 10 people bother to even go and vote. And half of them, you just said, well, I wish you didn't bother to go, because they're the idiots who will listen to the TV and the papers and go, I read The Sun and Blair ain't no good. And you just go, you cannot believe how many poor people do not understand that the Labour Party are there for them.
I think it's democracy.
No, democracy says go and vote. That's what democracy says. If you don't participate, you get anarchy, not democracy. And it's about people going to vote. And I can absolutely assure you, my mate who's the leader of Greenwich Council, who's on the GLC now, got elected by 10% of the ward that he was in, which was less than 1% of the people of Greenwich. And this guy had the second biggest budget in London.
And we've got a caller on the line. Will it be democracy? Will it be anarchy? What do you think, caller? What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles. Peter.
Morning, Peter.
You know me. I prefer anarchy over democracy all day long. There's no such thing as democracy in a two-party system, so, and there never has been. We haven't had democracy for years, and they've proven that in America at the moment, but that's another subject. But as, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, Alf, but since Thatcher came out of power, I think it's about a 50-50 split, Labour and the Tories, and who's been in power since then.
Yep,
about 50-50. Yeah. So what was Labour doing then? They were in power for all those years then. Well, I think Blair came into power. On education, and then spent 12 years doing nothing about it.
Second time.
And you say poor people don't vote? That's because they have no one to vote for. And Labour are just as bad as the Tories. All they want to do, I've listened to you all talking today about your benefits, about your sickness, about they should give us this, they should top up that, they should do this, because governments over the years have made you rely on them. Since the war, people have known they will retire without a decent pension. People know that if they work for large companies, they will not earn a decent wage. Yet nobody does anything about it. And you, Alf, and your unions are what legitimises these companies to be able to do it. Because otherwise they wouldn't be able to do it. But when the union turns around and says, this is a good deal, take it, this is what we're getting, this is what we have, that's what legitimises them. Now, for, like I said, 50-50 split. And still, nobody has done nothing. Nobody will ever do anything, especially for the poor. That's why the poor don't vote, because there's nobody to vote for.
Peter, okay? It's very glib. It's very glib. Thank you very much. You do this to me every time. Yeah, it might be very true in your part of the world. In my part of the world, I can, I ain't going to sit here for an hour giving you the list of everything that happened under the Blair government. No, they didn't go far enough, for me even.
They went,
well, of course they didn't. They didn't introduce the minimum wage. They didn't do anything for education. They did nothing for schools. They did nothing for hospitals. No, come
on.
Of course they put it in. Of
course. You voted for him. Then he went to war. Then you re-voted for him.
Whoa. Hang on a minute. He didn't go to war. Parliament went to war. Oh, yeah. I've heard all this nonsense before. If he was... Of course.
Right, we've got another caller on the line. Go to the other call. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please? Thanks for holding.
No problem. Just say peace. It's John from today.
Good morning, John.
Anyway, just to say that, you know, coming from what was basically now be called an impoverished family... through circumstances, when I was at school, we didn't get a breakfast in the morning. What we did get, if you were on the poor side, which we were, you got a free school lunches. Now, this seems to me slightly better. They're giving you a breakfast, and those who qualify who are poor will also get a free lunch. I mean, most of the kids bought their, we call it dinner money from the old days. So it didn't matter who was in power, you actually had your. If you were wealthy enough, you paid for your free school dinners, but we never had a breakfast. Now you're going to have a breakfast, and those who qualify for poor, which is probably my family at the time, you'd get your free school lunch, and the others will have to pay. It seems reasonable to me. Maybe I've got it wrong.
Thank you very much for the call. Take a short break and then back with more viewpoints.
Now, more than ever, we are your voice in Spain.
TRE, Talk Radio Europe. Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
You listen to Viewpoint Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme discussing the issues of the day. 952-784-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. We have a caller on the line already. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where you're calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yes, good morning, Giles. It's Gary here.
Good morning, Gary.
Well done, Peter, for giving the programme some sort of balance. And because Alf needs to be reminded about all this money that they once pumped in, that Labour should pump into the economy, and free social care, etc., tuition fees, and all the rest. And because Alf, with due respect to Alf, he seems to be the only person. He keeps banging on. Alf, you wasn't the only person to be brought up in a deprived area, and the arrogance of someone that thinks they should vote Labour for the rest of their life absolutely astounds me.
Gary?
It really does astound me.
Thank you for your viewpoint, Gary, as always. 952-784-4000, the phone number, studio at talkradioeurope.com, the email, the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official. Got an email in on studio at Talk Radio Europe. I can't believe... okay. But it says we're very one-sided, and sadly not for me anymore. And they agree with Peter. Thanks for the call in there, Stephen. 952-784-4000. This is a programme about viewpoints. We're happy to hear your viewpoints and take your viewpoints as long as they don't become too personal. Right then, let's move on. Let's move on a little while to President Trump. We've not spoken about him in detail in this show. He's been busy. It's been an interesting time both at home and, more importantly, abroad. Donald Trump, President Trump, on his first foray into the world of international diplomacy and statesmanship-like behaviour. Nathan, your thoughts, please.
It's certainly an interesting trip, and so far there has been no... I don't think anybody can say there's been any kind of disaster one way or another. The bar has been set very low. I mean, I think everybody was hoping that if he didn't do something extreme or embarrass himself or the country, it would be a success. And so far he's managing to do that. In fact, I think he's done a lot better than many people expected. I mean, he in Saudi Arabia. He challenged Arab nations, but did not insult them, as many people were afraid he was going to with the anti-Muslim rants that he peppered his campaign with. I mean, that was nowhere to be seen in all of this. I mean, he was treated very well, which I think he enjoyed. Received the golden chain around his neck and all of that, and I think. You know, that was fine. But his speech, I think, was very good. Whether it gets us anything or not, I don't know. He did challenge Muslim countries to do more about extremists. Whether they do or not, we just have to wait and see. He moved on to Israel yesterday. Today he's on the West Bank with Palestinian leaders. He's seeming, and the White House is putting out that, I mean, this is a problem he may solve. I mean, he has not domestically been the great deal maker that he made himself out to be, at least so far. Perhaps on the international stage, he may have more luck. I don't know. As he said at one point, I mean, this is more difficult than I thought it was going to be. Mm. And of course, he's now into territory that time after time, different U.S. leaders and others have tried to reach some kind of solution and haven't. But on he goes.
Roslyn, your thoughts?
Well, I just thought he did come away with quite a lot from Saudi Arabia, didn't he? $350 billion over the next 10 years as an arms dealer, and nothing as far as human rights. I mean, he didn't even stick to a few issues that had been sort of written into previous contracts to do with human rights.
Right.
He's purely commercial. So he's come away with quite a lot.
I mean, the thing is, I suppose one of the main things... Oh, we've got a caller on, excuse me. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. Sorry, thank you for holding. What's your name, where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Steve calling from Calderbet.
What's key, Steve?
Could I just quickly go back to the last bit of a conversation that was going on?
Which was dealing with the Labour Party? Absolutely.
Yes, and the school dinners.
Yes.
From what it sounds like, most of the people who rang up, the last five callers are all of an age where, like myself, we all got a free dinner. So I don't really see why the sixth richest country can't afford to give those dinners and why they stopped them in the first place. Mrs. May has demonstrated to me the reason why you need to have a party that's there to actually contradict some of her efforts, because it seems clear that if she goes unfettered, she's going to be able to just decide anything for everybody who lives in the UK. It does worry me that because of the fact that... if you take, example, her nuclear interest and some of the other things that she wants to do, that she's just going to totally abuse the country.
Right.
And I'm quite surprised that even though everybody thought 2 weeks ago that Corbyn was out of it completely, at least he's now narrowing the gap. And for all people who live in the UK, I'd just like to remind everybody that we talk about democracy, but you need a party to fight against the ones that are in, and at least he's providing that opposition now. That's all I like to say.
Steve, thank you for your call in there. Thank you for your call in on the Labour. 952-78-4000, the phone number, studio@talkradioeurope.com. The email, we were talking about the foreign trip, the first foreign foray for the President Trump. He seems to have been sticking to the script, which is perhaps what many observers were waiting for him to make one of his, to go off message and deliver one of his famous gaffes.
Absolutely, because Nathan was going, because Nathan looked at what was happening, the speeches, all that. And I just go, you know what, the biggest part of Sky News on this visit was why his missus whacked his hand away when he tried to hold it.
Mm.
And you think, they've got nothing else to report, so they're looking for every little weeny bit, aren't they? So they come off the plane, they walk down the thing, he tries to hold his wife's hand, she knocks it away, and you go, well, I wonder what all that was about. That detracts from anything else anyway, but the rest of it is just... It's just what you would expect from a normal trip by an ambassador from a country, in this case the president.
Yeah, but nobody expected a normal trip from Donald Trump. So, like I said, the bar was not very high, and he's doing well at this point. So,
and we've got some more callers. We've got some more callers on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Thanks for holding. What is your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Raymond from York again.
Yes, Raymond.
About President Trump, apparently it was $398 billion. $100 billion of it was arms. What he has done is, and I think he's made it very clear to the Saudis who his ally is, who are, you know, he's firmly allied with them, the United States and the Saudis. What he's also done is, he's laid his cards on the table, backing the Saudis completely against the competition, which is Iran, which is backed by China and Russia.
The Chinese have been supplying Iran with lots of weaponry, so have the Russians. The danger here, you know, he's having a go against Iran for their support of terrorism and human rights, etc. There will be no possibility of any kind of diplomatic peace mission between the United States and Iran after he's done that. He's made it very clear. He stands on the one side, and this is what's happening. We all know this. In that part of the world, and it's a large chunk of the world, there's a competition going on for leadership of that world between Saudi Arabia and Iran. He's backing Saudi, naturally. Iran is, as I've said, are being backed by China and Russia. My fear is one day American jet fighters will be engaged accidentally, could be accidentally, in combat with Russian jet fighters, and no one will be able to talk their way out of that one.
Thank you for that one. We've got another caller on the line. Good morning. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please? Thanks for holding.
Hi, Giles. It's Sean Fuencarola.
Good morning, Sean.
More or less to support what Raymond has just said. But as someone that was really quite excited when Trump got elected, mainly for domestic policy reasons, I think he had quite a few good ideas on domestic policy and some on foreign policy, such as being very, very wary of NATO, such as wanting better relations with Russia. I am just appalled, although not enormously surprised, sadly, that Trump has become a complete stooge of the globalists. And nothing could illustrate that better than this latest trip to Saudi Arabia and Israel, of course, to be followed by the Vatican. But Saudi Arabia and Israel are really two of the major bêtes noires in the Middle East and global situation. Almost everything that's bad that comes out of the Middle East can be traced to those two countries and their allies. It is a complete farce. As I think Jason had said earlier, one of the huge mistakes that Trump made, even on the campaign trail, was his enmity towards Iran. In fact, Iran is the best hope that the Middle East has, and by extension the Western world, to being able to combat the evils of ISIS. To me, it is total farce, especially the Saudi government. I mean, these are wicked, wicked men who are currently presiding over a dreadful war in the Yemen and have also been instigating for years the influx of ISIS into Syria. So it's a dreadful mistake, and sadly Trump has shown himself to be exactly what he's always been, which is fundamentally a businessman.
Thank you very much.
Even though there are elements of Trump's domestic policies, as I said, that I still support, but sadly even those are disappearing very fast.
Thank you for your call in.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
You're listening to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs program with a panel. What a panel it is. Rosalind Scott Gibb, Alf Brewer, and Tom Nathan with us today. We're just talking about the the first foreign trip of President Trump. I was just saying to the panel, which I was shot down in flames about, was the fact that perhaps this is not much more than a glorified photo opportunity for the president. He's doing his allies in Saudi. He's looking good at the West Wall. He'll be meeting up with the Pope. He's going to Gaza today. He's going to be seeing NATO as well. Nathan, a glorified photo op?
Well, to a great extent, yes. And any trip like that is. Deals are not done in the 24 hours or 48 hours he's in some country talking to some leader as president. The same way the British prime minister goes somewhere. This is all things that have agreed on. We'll do the trip and it'll be a photo op and we'll sign the deal and everything. But the arms deal, the other deals that he did with Saudi Arabia, and I'm not taking credit away from him, but those deals are not done in 4 months. I mean, those have been underway and negotiated over a couple of years, and he happens to be president when they are finalized, and okay, he does that, and that's fine. But no, this trip, he is not doing a whole lot other than establishing relations. He's new to the world stage as a diplomat, as a president. He's meeting people. He's going places that he wants to go and that the U.S. you know, that the government thinks he should go and so on. But yes, a lot of it is the theater of politics.
Roslyn.
Yeah, but each of these places that he has been and is going are all a potential minefield. And okay, so far everybody's had a sigh of relief that he didn't make any major mistakes in Saudi Arabia and in Israel so far. But this issue against Iran, to me, in my opinion, is also very wrong, because the President Rouhani has been brought back into power. They've maintained the agreement to do with arms, and it's looking good. So for him to sort of point the finger and sort of side himself so much, I agree with the caller on that, and side himself so much with Saudi Arabia, I think, is a mistake. And it's he has been negotiating this deal. Okay, it hasn't all been done in 5 minutes, but his son-in-law brought down the price of it and of the arms of this $350 billion. And so it has been part of the negotiation. The negotiation has been going on at the same time.
We've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Sir, John from Islington again.
Yes, John.
I mean, just to point out, and obviously I hate all religious countries like Iran, and I'm sure that Trump will probably row back on it and become his best friend. But basically, I want to say, none of you on the panel can tell me a single country that Iran has ever been invaded. It's never invaded any country.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you isolate countries, and Russia being a prime case, if you don't talk to them and you isolate them, Russia now, he's now 80% more popular, Putin, whether you hate him or whatever. But then, you know, it's again, we're demonizing these countries, whereas in the Russia situation, they were more sinned against than sinners in Georgia and the Ukraine. It was basically the EU was a catalyst for the problems in the Ukraine.
More sinned again than sins. Thank you for your call, and we're getting to the last 5 minutes or so of the program. Nathan.
Well, one thing, when he was in Saudi Arabia, of course he talked up the wonderful relationship with Saudi Arabia and so on, downplayed Iran, but remember, in the greater scheme of things, during the campaign, the first thing Donald Trump was going to do was tear up the Iran weapons agreement. That hasn't happened. It doesn't look like it's going to happen. So, again, Donald Trump acts at the moment where he is and what's going on at the moment, and you hear that, but that's not necessarily forever. I mean, I don't think he's going to make a trip to Iran very soon. I mean, that seems unlikely. But, you know, a lot of the negative things he has said against Iran in the campaign, as has happened with other things, now that the campaign is over, suddenly things are different.
The problem is he doesn't do any research, and it's proven he doesn't do any background work before he goes into a situation. And here he's dealing with sort of, quote, experts, politicians, people who are used to in NATO and in the G7. He's not in a position to represent anything, because he never knows what he's talking about. That's why he only speaks about what's going on at the moment, because he has no background in it.
But no president, no prime minister, no leader of any country knows everything about everything.
They know something about it.
That's why they have a team of advisors around him. So he isn't saying anything that his advisors haven't told him about. And the fact that he ain't gone in-depth research, it's just like John's made a statement. I'm sitting there thinking, you're right, I can't remember Iran invading Iraq, but they certainly had a great big war, and America decided to side, and Britain decided to side with Iraq, no different to today, where Saudi Arabia have become, because they were kingpin to that peace solution there. You know, Saudi Arabia are looked at in the Middle East as being the country. As much as we don't like all their internal stuff, as much as we don't like the way they operate, they still keep a level of peace in the Middle East that just keeps the status quo going in lots and lots of countries. And they do, you know, put a blanket on things. Whereas Iran feed Hezbollah, feed Hamas,
yeah.
They feed the mob in Afghanistan, the Talibans. You know, they don't have to go and invade. They just feed the money out and provide space for training camps.
I didn't say that every president has to know everything about everything. That's not what I said at all. But most leaders take the advice and listen to their advisors, the people they know. And one of the things we know about Trump is he doesn't. He says what he thinks at the time and tends to support the last person he spoke to.
Nathan?
Nope, nothing.
So basically, yes, Trump is needing some of his Humphrey, if you like, from Yes Minister on his case. What it has done, of course, is deflected the news away from his domestic troubles that he seems to be having at the moment. This time last week, we were all talking about FBI, possible impeachments. That hasn't gone away, but obviously he's being seen as being much more statesmanlike on the world stage at the moment, Nathan.
Yes, I mean, as far as timing, and again, this trip was planned a long time ago, but it probably couldn't have come at a better time for Trump, because it took the spotlight with him to all of these world capitals where he's doing this and doing that, and people are watching him. But yes, when he does go back to the U.S., he is going to have all kinds of different problems there. I mean, the situation with Flynn and the Russians and the investigations into the Russians and the firing of the FBI director, and who's going to testify and who's not going to testify, and what witnesses there or what evidence there is of this, that, and the other thing is still boiling there, and it is going to be problematic. There's no question about that. And again, it is going to, I think, generally the worst part of it is going to take up a lot of time and attention and resources of, you know, just thought resources, financial resources, everything else. Rather than the country doing whether you like what Donald Trump wanted to do or not, he's not going to be able to do a lot of it. And one of the reasons is he's embroiled in all of this controversy that is going to continue, and it's going to get a lot worse and a lot more noticeable once he gets back to the United States.
Do you think that Trump's going to run into any more opposition or any potential brickbats on his rest of this tour? I mean, you know, he's going to be coming to Brussels. Can you see him being demonstrations, all European leaders showing their displeasure?
There will be demonstrations, because wherever he goes, there's going to be demonstrations. But that's nothing to do with Trump, is it? Well, it's because of him, but it's about, he's meeting the G7. What's he going to be saying at the G7 other than, you know, I need you to do this? What's he going to do with NATO? He's going to be saying to the countries, put your GDP amount in. He's going to be doing normal things, because that's what this is about. Yeah, in my view, this is simply him going to all the places that he says, you know, this is
what
America supports.
He's supposed to be taking the US out of the environmental agreement. That's a big issue.
Yeah, but that's not to do with the G7, is it?
I think it is, isn't it?
No, it's not the G7 agreement.
It's supposed to be now, during
Russia,
this trip.
Russia has to be involved. That's why it's a G7, not a G8. It's the G40, which is the one that does all the environmental issues, all the ones who organise, because it has to be worldwide. G7 is seven nations. That's why it's called a G7. Britain happens to be one of them, because we're the fifth biggest, but, you know. Is Germany involved in the G7?
Yes, absolutely.
And you know, again, yes, his environmental policies, a lot of people don't like it and everything. I don't think that's going to come up at all. I mean, this is a getting-to-know-you thing. This is the first time most of these people will have met him. He is the U.S. president. They are going to have to deal with each other on a whole lot of issues. And, again, unless Trump goes off on a tangent somewhere, it's going to be fine.
Mike, Will, Nigel Farage out.
Indeed. Right then, we are out of time. It's been an interesting and lively viewpoint. My thanks to my panellists, Ros and Scott Gibb.
Thank you, Giles. A pleasure, as always.
Thank you, Ros. Alf Brewer, of course.
Thank you.
And Nathan Dormer. Thank you very much, Nathan.
Another interesting week.
This programme will be available again at 6 o'clock. Steve Ritson, up next.
The views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe SL.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.